So, Chodesh Tov and Mevorach, it's now Daf Tes Vav, 45 days in the Omer, and we're ready to go on. We're holding on Yudalad Amid Beis, almost at the bottom. So we're in the middle of the sugya of trying to define the dinim of Beit Shammai, whether they were actually asukid varav or not. And the issue seems to revolve around the shaila of whether they were chayshesh velotit godadu. Rish Lakish raised it to Rabbi Yochanan. So that was the shaila. If they were, Rabbi Yochanan had claimed that this was an old problem of lotit godadu, which you're going to have to deal with. And, however you dealt with it in terms of Beit Shammai, and Beit Hillel, that's how you'll have to understand the Chalal, the Sugya, wherever it comes up. But that's the question, Shnei Batei Dinim, Yirach Az, or Bez Din Echad, which... Wow. Or Bez Din Echad, Shnei. In any event, so they got into a question over there. Rish Lakish said, what are you bringing me from there? They never did what they said. They just held it theoretically. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan said, Asu, we found that was about Machlokas Rav and Shmuel as well, and we've been attempting to bring riyas from various Mishnayos and Brises as to what the din is. Did they in fact say what they said and carry it out, despite the questions of Lotit Godadu or not? So Tashma, we're holding now five lines up from the bottom, right at the end of the daf. Tashma, for the line I mean, Deom Rabbi Yochanan ben Duri. How is it possible that we should get stuck with a situation like this, in which no matter what you do, you're in trouble, according to the other Shita? If somebody follows the words of Beit Shammai that a tzarat habat is chayevet in Yibum, so then avlad mamzer l'divrei Beit Hillel. According to Beit Hillel, you just basically, you have a child with that woman, the child is a mamzer. Because that woman is an erva mama. She's an nation's actual b'mokam mitzvah. If, on the other hand, nasik l'divrei Beit Hillel, if we're going to follow the words of Beit Hillel and be matir, the woman l'shuk, and then she has a child, and she's a sur l'shuk with an iser lav. So then avlat pagum l'divrei Beit Shammai. According to that, this child will be psula l'kuhuna. We're going to see later on that there's a kal v'chomer, at least the way Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri learns there's a kal v'chomer from the din, where the Torah says that if an almana marries a kohen gadol, even though it's only an iser lav, that the child is a chalala and cannot marry a kohen. So what, he makes a kal v'chomer that if that's true, even of an Israel manah, which is so limited, it's only on a kohen gadol, it's like the most limited Israel there is. Nonetheless, the child that is created is peguma, in the sense that she cannot marry into the kohuna. So kol shekein, a lav of this kind that is chal on everybody, nobody's allowed to marry Yavam al-Ashok, has a child with a Yavam al-Ashok, the din should be that the child is Tzidol the Kuhuna. So that means we're creating a situation over here of either Chalalut, so the Kohen will not be able to be a Kohen, the daughter won't be able to marry to the Kuhuna, or Mamzerut, which is even worse, Tzidol the Kahal Bechlal. Says Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, this is a disaster. We can't have a situation like this. There's a way out of it. All we have to do is bov in itakein lehem litzarot. Let's make a takana. The takana should be that every time there's a tzarat erva, shiu chotzot v'lo yibit. If we force them to get chalit, so we're yotzi bot deot, because then we're saying, well, you can't get married. Well, we don't have to stick our heads into the machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel directly. We treat them equally. In other words, we say, look, you're both wrong, basically, in terms of lemaisa. I mean, we want to make sure that there's no sfeikas over here. So we'll make you get chalitza. That way there's no problem according to Beit Shammai. I mean, he didn't say you have to do yibum. He just said you could do yibum. No, you won't do yibum. You'll only do chalitza. There's no problem according to Beit Hillel, because you're not sleeping with her. All you're doing is having her take off your shoes. What's the big deal? So therefore, there would be no problem. Now, our girsa is, as you see, lo yispiku li gmorat adavar. However, the girsa in other locations, and which seems to make a little bit more sense, is that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, the next word at the end of the line, comes first, lo yispiku ligmor et hadavar, because that obviously was part of the conversation. So that it's inverted over here because of the way in which we need to deal with the words of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, but that doesn't mean that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel didn't say what he said before the next line. You'll see in a moment why it's logical to have it that way. So lo yispiku ligmor et hadavar, however, they were unable to be metaken this takana that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri wanted to be metaken. Ad shenitrafa hasha'ah, things went bad, they had to break up the Besdin, they were under attack, and they were never able to get together again on this issue. And the truth is that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel really didn't accept the idea, since they weren't able to iron it out between them, so they couldn't act. Reb Shimon Gamliel said to him, this is a takona that's all very nice if the world was created today. However, there currently do exist children that have been born prior to the takona. Now, how is that going to affect them? That's something that you have to think about. Because mana selem litzorot harishonot mehat. That is, what is it that we are now going to do with the original tzorot before our takana, that went ahead and got married, and they now have children who are mamzerim, at least according to Beit Hillel. Okay, so now it is, so nowadays everybody says, all right, look, I mean, you can follow that local like Beit Shammai. But if the Chachamim are going to make a takana, 10 years later, everybody's going to remember only that, of course. I mean, it only takes 10 years until this became the minhag of Yisrael Kol HaDoros, as you know. It's amazing how many, I don't even know if it takes that long. But everyone is convinced that anything that's been done over the past 10 years must have been done by Moshe Rabbeinu. So what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that people, 10 years later, one of the kids in school is going to be saying, isn't that interesting? Wasn't your mother at Tzoras Habas and learning Yevamos together? And of course, the next thing is you, Mamzer. That's the end of the story. It's a disaster. So what do you mean? We come from a Beit Shammai family. No, nobody does that. It's minig l'doros. You only get chalitza. How did you do such a thing?
There's an article in today's paper about a rabbi who annulled the conversion of 15 years ago.
Wow.
He says they're not allowed to marry in Israel, and the wife is not either.
Okay. It's always the good. The daf is always no gain. In any event, says the Gemara, look, I mean, if according to the Shita that says that Beit Shammai never did what they claimed, I mean, so there's no problem. What do we say? What are we going to do with all those poor Mamzerim? There aren't any poor Mamzerim because Beit Shammai, according to you, never did it. You're saying, Reish Lakish, right? So if you're telling me, that Rabbi Yochanan is right, and that actually Beit Shammai always not only paskin they paskin lachal ma'isa, and they went ahead and they were miyabim the tzar of the body. So then Haina de Kamer Mana said that would explain why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is concerned for the reality of these children and their experiences in school and so on. And miyamid lo asu, there's no such kid. So what are we worried about? My Mana said, what is he saying? How can you make a takana? What do you mean? Takana is going to be good for everybody, and since nobody actually did the Yibum of Tzoras Habas, who are we affecting wrongly? Omer Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, the question over here, you're right. The issue wasn't the children of the Tzoras of Beit Shammai. The issue was over here that Tzoras themselves, according to Beit Hillel. I mean, everybody certainly has been following the Shita of Beit Hillel for all of these years. And, I mean, the normative approach after somebody, the brother dies leaving a Tzoras Erva and an Erva, is they say there's no Yibum. So the Tzoras Erva now goes ahead and marries somebody else, right? So she's living happily with her husband 20 years later. And all of a sudden we promulgate this new halacha that actually she has a din of Yevam Lashuk without chalitza. So, what is she going to do now? What are you going to say she's going to do? Well, she can always apply to the rapid chalitza, that the special courses on chalitza that they went, you know, for these kind of situations. So we have the machon lechalitza mihira, and then she just goes there, right? So what's the big deal? So Mana said, but first let's see it inside. It says Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, the issue was the tzora herself. When it says Mana said, doesn't mean the problem of the kids. It means Avikama. Hanach tzorot de Beit Hillel. What is going to happen now about the tzoras of Beit Hillel? So according to Beit Shammai, you're saying now we're coming out with this psak that we need now chalitza. What is supposed to do for them now? Shall we say they should attend lichvot, so they should go to the rapid chalitza society? Nimasiya gavrayu. I mean, the husbands are going to feel, well, what kind of business is this? You mean she really was another guy's zekuka this whole time? He's going to start feeling rather strange about her, you know? So you'll say, no, what's the big deal? Halacha is halacha. Let her feel strange. I mean, you got to do God's will. It's impossible, because drachei adarchei noam, v'chol etivoteha shalom, how could God will something so nonsensical that is obviously not the way in which the world should work, if the Torah is supposed to lead only to happiness over here, and these guys are going to be unhappy with their wives. So that's what he's saying. We can't make such a takon. It's a crazy takon. And then basically everything fell apart, and they never made that takon. Fine. So that means we still have no raya about whether Asur Beit Shammai Kedivrayhem or not. Toshma.
Could have been, could have
not. Right? We don't know. Toshma. In other words, it depends on what he meant. If he meant the Tzara themselves, then lo asu. If he meant the children of the Tzara, then ken asu. But we don't know what he meant. We're suggesting. He might have meant the Tzara atzma. Okay, I can prove that. So, let's see if we can bring right from here. Rabbi Tarfon was a famous Talmud of Beit Shammai, and we know from the whole Maisa and Brochas that he was got himself almost knocked off by a mugger, because he wanted to make sure he did the Kriyat Shema, Libra Beit Shammai, so he was lying down and so on. Great place to lie down in Central Park right at the time of Kriyat Shema. It was not a good idea. So, in any event, he was such a Fabrenta Talmud, at least that's the way we understand it, he says, I can't wait to get an opportunity. My brother should only drop dead and leave me with his daughter and another woman, you know. That matay tavot sarat habat yadi. If I got an opportunity like that, and I'm going to marry you. I'll teach them, all of these faint-hearted fools. So obviously, if he was really going to go ahead and do it, I mean, it must mean that Beit Shammai held you really go ahead and do it, right? Please. Otherwise, how else do we understand it? No. No, he didn't say Ve'esa'ena, for heaven's sake. It's a little yud that makes all the difference in the world. He said Ve'asi'ena, just to show that we don't practice the halacha that we're saying. I want personally to make sure that she gets married L'shuk. And then everyone will see that we don't paskin like Beit Shammai. I mean, that's called tiavnia. Oh, I can't wait. That's just delicious. I'm waiting for the opportunity. I mean, everybody does that. It's going to make a gigantic splash. You know, front page of the New York Times. Guess what? Etzoras Abbas was married off today by Rabbi Tarfon to somebody.
Without
Chalitza. Yeah. Well, I mean, the last 10,000 Etzoras Abbas has gotten married to people without Chalitza. What are we putting this in the New York Times for? So you're calling that Tiavni. Tiavni is a guy who wants to make a splash. I mean, there's no splash. No, there is a splash in the sense that it's Lafukin Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. He was concerned with this whole takona that had just gone on. The rumors had gotten out. Besin's getting together. They're going to make a takona. People were saying there already was a takona. We do need chalitza. Oh, that's ridiculous. I got to prove that no such thing happens. There was no such takana. We have to let her. That, in fact, that makes a splash. It's showing something, but there is no such takana. Toshma. Okay, so from here we have no raya, because you could read it with the yud or without the yud. So how about over here? Toshma. Ma'aseh bibitosha ram gamliel. Shaitan nesu'a la'aba achiv. Now, Rabbi Gamliel had a brother by the name of Abba, and he was married to Rabbi Gamliel's daughter, so he had married his niece. He died without children, made below banim, and Rabbi Gamliel went ahead personally and was miyabim the Tzara Sabah. Obviously, I mean, must be Semech on Beit Shammai, and you see that Asuka de Rayemi actually went ahead and did this. Come on, but his brother, what are you from? Gamliel's going to follow Beit Shammai? And Gamliel is from the family of the Nesiut of Hillel. I mean, that would be ridiculous for him to start all of a sudden. He's going to go over to the other side, and that's impossible. So what do you think happened over here? I mean, Rabbi Gamliel, you think that Rabbi Gamliel became a Talmud of Beit Shammai? Ela shine bitosh Rabbi Gamliel, the Ilonit avoy. Actually, she was an Ilonit. We assume that this means. So since she was an Ilonit, she's included in the part of the Mishnah. It says the Kulon, she nimtzu'u Ilonit, Torateh emutara. Okay. The daughter was an Ilonit, in which case, assuming right now, in which case, the meaning is that the marriage was annulled because it was a Mekach Torus, and therefore she basically had, there was only one wife to his brother, and it wasn't his daughter, so it really wasn't Torah Sabbath, like the Mishnah says, the equivalent of a Gerushin before the Mekach Torus. Says, well, how can you say that? Midiktani Seifa, in that very brisa that describes the event of Bito Rabbi Gamliel, there is another Tana, which is the Acherim Aimrim, that Bitosh Rabbi Gamliel Ilonit Haita. So in other words, what they're saying is, now wait a minute, the story is not so simple. She was an Ilonit. Now you're claiming, well, but that was true even according to the Tanakhama. And he certainly didn't marry a Tzoras Abbas, a Libet of Beit Shammai. So then they stand, but that's what the Tanakhama was saying then. What do you mean the Acherim Aimrim? Unless you mean that Michlal, the Tanakhama, Savalav Ilonit Haita. You must be saying that the Tanakhama held that he married the Tzoras Abbas was not an Ilonit. Go explain it to me, baby. I mean, the only way I can understand that is that it's Beit Shammai. And the Acherim said, no, that wasn't the story. She wasn't really a Tzoras Abbas. She was an Ilonit. How else do you understand it? No, says the Gemara. Wait a second. There are, remember, two ways of understanding the idea of Ilonit. One is, when we say if she turns out to be an Ilonit, so then we have a Mekach Toz in the Kiddush. Right? That, however, reads in the Mishnah the word Nimtzu Ilonit. Kulam Shem Nimtzu, they were discovered to be Ilonit. However, if you recall earlier, we had a couple days ago, we had Rava who said that a Tzoras Ilonit, even a Tzoras Ilonit of Abbas, is Muteret. Why? Because you can read the Mishnah Hayu. Since the only time that a Tzara of Abbas becomes a Surah is where it's B'mokam Mitzvah, an Ilonit, since it says in the Torah, Aben, that's referring to Atka, Asher, only the one that will be Alud will be born, so if she can't give birth, B'chor Asher Teleid, if you can't give birth, then you're not included in the midst of Yibum. So if you're not included in the midst of the Yibum, then that means that the Tzara is not a Tzara of a Mokam Mitzvah. That was Rav Asfara. In which case, it doesn't mean Shem Nimtzu Ilonit, it means Shehayu Ilonit. It means that you had two ways of understanding the Mishnah. That, in fact, is the Machlokas over here. The second Pshita over here that says Acherim, it says Hayita. She was an Ilonit all along. And that's why he married the daughter, not because it was a Mekach Toz, which was discovered to be an Ilonit, but because there was no problem with Tzoras Abbas in a case where the Bat is an Ilonit, because it's Shelo B'Mokam Mitzvah. Whereas we're still right in saying that obviously he wasn't following Beit Shammai. The Tanakhama was only saying, it's not true that Ilonit Hayita. It's not that she was all along an Ilonit, it's that she was discovered to be an Ilonit, so therefore was only because we annulled the marriage. Because had he known, he wouldn't have accepted her. So that's the Machlokas, which is a subsection of the whole issue. But it has absolutely nothing to do with Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Because, I mean, certainly he wouldn't have followed the din of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai anyway. He was a staunch Nasi of the Bayit of Beit Hillel. So there's no way to understand it any other way. Well, you know what? There's another possibility in understanding the machlokas of the Tanakama and the Acher. The Iba, Itaima, the machloket over here might be Kanas Ulubasov Giresh Ikabinaya. The Tanakama is saying he married the Tzoras Abbas, even though she wasn't an islandist, maybe, but she had gotten divorced before he died.
He is the father of the brother who died.
Father? Abba is the name of the brother, not the father.
No. There was a man who had a brother named Abba who married the man's daughter.
Married?
Abba died.
No. He married the woman that had been married together with his own daughter to the brother named Abba. You're not engaging in iconization, and you're therefore confusing yourself. You know what a Tzoras Abbas is, for God's sake. Don't go over the whole thing in your head again and confuse yourself. It doesn't matter. There's a Tzoras Abbas where the Bat got divorced before her husband died, and now only the Tzora fell to the brother. You know what those words mean. So who cares? If I start talking about a second cousin once removed, you know what it means. Don't start playing games on. Well, wait a minute. What does that mean that Aunt Sally and Aunt... Forget about Aunt Sally and Aunt Molly, okay? We know what the case is. So we have a Tzoras Abbas. The boss was divorced before her husband died. Everything is fine. So he went ahead and he married her. What's the matter with that? I'll tell you what's the matter with that. Because remember that we had a machlokas earlier about whether mita mapela denisuin harishonim mapin. So over here, that would make a tremendous nafkamina. Does the divorce of the daughter have to take place before the marriage to the other woman who is the tzara? And that's what the Mishnah means when it says that she was, I mean, obviously not the Mishnah, but that would be the way the later Mishnah approaches it. So that man, the Omar says, but if they had gotten married and shared the same husband at any time, too late. Then she's already a Tzoras Abbas. That's the Acherim say, don't tell me she got divorced. It was too late already to get divorced. They'd been married. It must be that she was an islandist. Fine. So it was a divorce or an annulment or whatever it is, but it had nothing to do with Beit Shammai. Maybe that's the way of understanding them. I mean, there's a lot of ways we could understand the machlokas. I mean, it could be Ibai Seima Yeshnai Babiya, he could be naive. Maybe when he had married the daughter, so he had made a condition. Actually, the condition was that she was supposed to do something, you know, I'm marrying you on condition that you get a good job at such and such a firm, you know. Turns out she never got the job. So the Tanakama holds, okay, she never got the job, so forget about the Kiddushin, right? But there's a Shita that holds that if a person makes a T'nai in a marriage, but then goes ahead and sleeps with the woman, he obviously does not want now retroactively to be viewed as just shacking up with this girl. I mean, so he's now canceling any conditions that he made. So there's no T'nai that continues to apply after an act of bia. That's how Rashi looks. There's another sheet that it holds among a few Rishonim that there's no T'nai in a kedushin that is made with bia. But there's no need for us to say this here. And Rashi doesn't know that's the case and so on. So how did he marry a Tzoras Abbas? She was an islandist. Wasn't because there's no T'nai with bia. Fine. You know what? We can come up with many explanations what they are arguing about. But basically the underlying issue is, did she need to be an islandist, or was there some other issue? So the nicest approach is to say they're both agreeing she's an islandist. The question was, did she need to be discovered an islandist, or because she'd been an islandist all along? But I mean, if you don't like that, you could go ahead and say, the question is, was she or was it? Did she need to be an islandist for such a crazy event to happen? Or could she have been Megoresha before? Or could it be that their marriage was annulled because of some condition before? I don't know. But it has nothing to do with Beit Shammai. That's the important thing to us. Most of her Mishash. Now, wait a second. You're still trying to claim that Beit Shammai held their halachas only theoretically? And not halacha l'maisa? They didn't actually do it? How about the famous mice of Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva went ahead and picked an esrog on the first day of Shvat. Now, normally, when you pick a fruit, we couldn't care less when you pick it, because it has to do with when that fruit budded. However, remember that an esrog is different. You'll recall we had this sugya a number of times. An etrog is different, and an etrog is considered to be the equivalent of a vegetable in this halakha, that it follows the din of likita. So everything is defined by when it was picked. However, it is a fruit, and in terms of defining its halakha of when exactly is it considered to be in the year of Maaser Sheni, and when is it considered to be in the year of a Maaser Ani. So suppose you were holding in Shvat of the year between the second year of Shemitah and the third year. So now the question is, if it grew before its Tu B'Shvat, the way we look at it, Tu B'Shvat, it's viewed as last year's Perot, and it was a second year Etrog. So you have to take off Maaser Sheni. But if you hold, however, forget about hold. And if you pick it after Tu B'Shvat, like Beit Hillel, so now it's a third year Etrog, and now it's a Maaser Ani Etrog. Fine. Now remember, there was a machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Is the day Tu B'Shvat or is the day Rosh Chodesh Shvat? Comes along Rabbi Akiva, and he went and picked his esrog on the first day of Shvat. And now, apparently, in order to be yotze both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, he went ahead and he took off both Maaser Sheni and Maaser Ani. So nag bo shnei yisurim. Echad kidivrei Beit Shammai, because according to Beit Shammai, it's already after the first day of Shvat, and therefore there's a third year etrog. So I'm going to have to give some to Aniyim. According to Beit Hillel, it's still a second year etrog. So it's a Maaser Sheni, I have to be paid and eat it in Yerushalayim. So Shema Aminah Asu. I mean, if you're telling me this was only theory about Rosh Chodesh, I mean, nobody from Beit Shammai would ever have publicly conducted themselves in such a way that would go against the normative halacha, that would be a problem of lo tigodedim. That's what you're claiming. I mean, so then why would Rabbi Akiva have worried about it if even Beit Shammai themselves would never have passed such a thing? So Shema Aminah Asu. Apparently, they did do this. There is a machlokas rishonim, by the way, as I mentioned to you earlier. I mean, when we say lo asu k'divrei, that means that what? That they went l'kula? So some learn, no, that some of them means lo asu publicly. That's the point. Remember, we were talking about lo tisgodedu. It's not the pshat that you can't keep a halacha, it's that you can't go ahead and make a fuss over it. So that's why we said, in the cases that we had earlier, let's say by doing malacha on Erev Pesach at night, we said, okay, people will say you just don't have anything to do it, you're lazy, whatever. I mean, that's not a locus coded. The same thing is true if people don't notice it. It's no problem with locus coded. So according to those who showed him, the question from all of these cases is the fact that things were done in a way that was mepharsim. That's the issue. So apparently, they did keep that halacha. No, that's not why Rabbi Akiva took off two masrot. He wasn't trying to keep the halacha of Beit Shammai. He just forgot whether it was Beit Shammai. Was it Beit Shammai? Is that Tu B'Shvat? Was that Beit Hillel? Is that Tu B'Shvat? So anyway, because of that Gemara, the Akrilis, he forgot his Gemara. Stop it, quick. V'lo yadai Beit Hillel be'echad b'shvat amur or b'tu b'shvat amur. So now he wasn't sure what the halacha was. The halacha that goes according to Rosh Chodesh or Tu B'shvat. Because of that, he was knowing Shnei Yisroel because of a suffix Ladina in Beit Hillel, not because maybe the halacha is like Beit Shammai.
We should see that also or lo asu always means all halachas instead of just Talit and Yibum in this case.
Oh, that's for sure. Also the Klal, where they also get it wrong.
Opposed to using not extreme categories such as.
Correct.
When was Rabbi Akiva Matush
Maaser Ani? Right then, on the spot.
But that was in between the 2 days, correct?
Yeah.
So that would have been prior to the date that myself.
It was on Rosh Chodesh, and he wasn't sure whether this was a Maaser Sheni Eser or a Maaser Ani Eser. He took up both.
On the side that it was a Maaser Ani, which would have been really Chav only on Tu B'Shvat.
Which was a Maaser Ani, which was really true.
Which would have been next week, let's
say. No. There's nothing to do with that. If you hold that it goes, there is no Tu B'Shvat if you hold it goes according to Rosh Chodesh. Forget about Tu B'Shvat.
Right, so if you hold according to Rosh Chodesh,
so then now you're already in the third year. And it's Maaser Ani. If you hold Rosh Chodesh, it's
right.
Now
so
the third year.
The third year so
but if it's Tu B'Shvat, it's prior to Rosh Hashanah.
And then we'll be Maaser Sheni.
And then it'll be Maaser Sheni. Right. Most of our zutra. Okay, I got a case for you. I got a case where somebody made a very big impact with what he was doing. You know, there's a machlokus about whether there's a chiyav on a cotton in a sukkah, whether he's dafka in a tzarech le'imai or not. So it comes along Shammai HaZakeh. His daughter-in-law had now a baby, and sukkahs. Poor baby's not going to be in a sukkah. It's a disaster. So picheta tama'azima. He breaks open the roof. V'sichecha gabei mita b'shvil katani. Put now schach over the roof, where there used to be a roof, in order that the sukkah should now be over the bed. Lemaisa, I mean, the Achronim discussed the question of, I mean, even if you hold that there's a din, you don't need tzarech le'imo, you certainly need to be b'chlal chinuch. That's ridiculous. An infant sitting in a sukkah because of chinuch? Nobody holds such a nonsensical thing. So the Marshal understands the whole sugya back there in the sukkah. The whole thing is not talking about bishvil kota, meaning bishvil the baby, but it means bishvil, since there was, now, the situation was that the mother is stuck in bed because she just gave birth, and she had another child, let's say 5 years old or whatever, who couldn't get, so it was a cotton. So in order that the cotton should be in the sukkah, he took care of the mother's bed. That's what Marshal understands. Achronim who didn't see the Marshal, long, it's like all kinds of interesting, that it's not a din in chinuch. It's a din in teshvukein to durum. So since normally you have your kids with you in the sukkah, so you have to be able to have your kids in the sukkah. So it must be that kids are also kind of the sukkah. Ask the parent, not also the chinuch. Anyway, it's an interesting case. But in any event, Kobit comes along now, Shammai Azaka, and openly does this. So, I mean, apparently, also Kiddi Vrayan. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of early on the Shammai.
It's very interesting. This is Shammai. This is not Beit Shammai. If the whole question was also Kiddi Vrayan, was it talking about Kaidam Basko, Acha Basko, Harifim or not, the Chedadit has nothing to do with this. It's the Shammai Hill themselves. You know, phenomenon. You sure didn't talk about this. What does this have to do with it? Say, fine, you're right, it's not exactly the issue that we're talking about, but basically what we're saying is, if there was really a chashash of lotus go to do, so then Shammai wouldn't have done it either. If we find Shammai not considering this to be a problem of lotus go to do, so then why should we assume that Beit Shammai later would have thought that there's a problem of lotus go to do, wouldn't have done their halacha? That's what it means. Yes. Yes, because we're reporting it. We're making a fuss over it. I mean, it must mean it. It's not something that people see. Shmamina asu. Yes, asu. Nu. And therefore what? Therefore everybody knows that he holds that the mother, the baby, however we learn it, had to be in the sukkah? Or therefore he basically installed a new air conditioner? How do you know? Maybe he broke down the roof to get some good air in there for the poor Yoledet. She was boiling. I mean, maybe he just put in a new air conditioning unit. No? What he's proclaiming, I do hereby dub the sukkah. He had an opening in his roof, so what's the big deal? And he shaded it so the sun shouldn't shine in. No? So if somebody would say, there's no chiyuv of a sukkah. What sukkah? Where's sukkah? Who's sukkah? I don't know what you're talking about. So there's certainly no load to go to in a case where it's your own assumption that he's doing this as far as the halakha is concerned.
That's the problem with ma'aseh.
With what?
With ma'aseh, but who knows what actually happened.
That's right. Masiv Marzutra. Marzutra has for another case. Okay, how about the famous case of Shoket Yehu? Now here we have our tour guide, Barnea. Shoket Yehu must have something to do with Barnea's neighborhood.
I have a suggestion after we do
this. Only afterwards.
Fieldrum is a mashi.
Rashi just says it's the name. The name was Shoket Yehu.
If it's seen or Tachas Sahar, where could that be? So one place would be where the Yichon spring comes out. Mm-hmm. This Taka a pool there, or I don't know. And the other maybe has to do with the channel that's cut into the mountain and goes all the way around. Which you might walk through one section that became uncovered. Because that's very early. Mm-hmm. So maybe so you look under that to see.
But you don't know if it had anything to do with Yehu.
No.
That's what I was hoping you would.
No.
All right, interesting. In any event, there was a central mikveh location in Yerushalayim that was called Shoket Yehu. Shoket is basically a hollowed out stone. And there was now water that was coming off of an elevated location, which Barnea suggests might have been an area around the Gihon. And it wasn't large enough. There's actually two ways of learning this, two gersos. Either the shoket wasn't large enough to be a kosher mikveh, but there was a pool next to it that was filled, and therefore they relied on a hashoka, which is to make a hole that's open between the two, and everybody was using shoket yehu, or vice versa. Everybody was using the mikveh that was open to shoket yehu. But in any event, what happened was, it was an equivalent mikveh, through an opening. And of course we had before the halacha, remember, that if you have this was part of our story in the Chagiga, that if you have an opening that is large enough to put in two fingers and twist them around, that's called Shvoferet Hanod, that opening is large enough to connect one non-kosher mikveh to a kosher mikveh, and therefore the whole thing becomes kosher. The problem is that Beit Shammai didn't hold to that. Beit Shammai held that it has to be mostly broken down. If there's a machitza, rove of the machitza has to go. Anyway, Beit Shammai sends a couple of workers over there in the dead of the night and had the thing busted open. So they broke open the boundary between the Shoket Yehu and the mikveh that was next to it. Now, they hold that you need to have most of the wall between the shoket and the mikveh opened, and yet we know that the Mishnah says, if it's not, we learned, we just had as a chagiga, that iruv mikvahot, as far as Beit Hillel is concerned, the only size that you would need to mix the two mikvahot together is not the rov of the mechitza. It's a very small opening, kishvoferet hanod, which you see in all the mikvahs, all of that little plug in there. So that's the Shvoferet HaNod. It has to be the same width of a straw that was used to be inserted into a leather bottle to drink from. And, of course, not only the straw part, but also the surrounding piece of the straw. They didn't have thin plastics in those days. So the thickness of the straw needed to be taken into consideration as well, not only the lumen of the straw. And so it was both the ovi and the chalal, both the walls of the straw plus the lumen of the straw, across the entire thing, which is kishtei etzpaot chazrot lemikoman, should be large enough to insert two fingers and twist them. Of course, the achronim already have a whole diyun. Is that the bottom of the finger? Is it the top of the finger? How thick part of the finger? And so on. But in any event, certainly not to bust down the whole wall. So apparently, Shmamina Asu, apparently Beit Shammai, were very active in pursuing the halacha l'shitatam, and they didn't care about what people would say in Lotit Godadu. No, there too. Maybe people would think, I mean, they'd say, what's going on over here? You have a shvoferet hanod. And you'd say, you want to go swimming in a swimming pool that has this half? I mean, what? I need an Olympic sized pool. What's wrong with you guys? So, hatam, haroe amr lafushimayo de ka'avit. What does he want? He wants more water. Well, who said it had something to do with halacha? So, therefore, again, it doesn't prove that they would have done what they did in ways that would have affected Lotit Godadu.
Explain it away.
If people, it's your own assumptions. Toshma, the Omer Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok said over a very interesting story. Kishayiti lomei Torah etzel Rabbi Yochanan Achorani. I used to learn by Rabbi Yochanan Achorani, who was a Talmud of Beit Shammai. But ra'iti shayah ochel pat chareva b'melach. I said, he's really, really having a bad time parnasa wise. It was Shnei Batzoret. It's a tough year. And I saw that all he had to eat was some hard bread and salt. So Bati Vodati et Ab, I went back to my father, Reb Tzadok, and I told him, this is terrible. Amarli, so he says to me, you know what? Holech lo zeitin, bring in at least some olives you can have with his bread. So I brought him some olives. Volachti, I bring him a jar of olives. Ra'otam shem lachim. He sees that the olives are there. So he says to me, I don't need olives. Obviously, we understood it was the wrong hedge. I don't eat. Yeah, right. You don't eat. You're a vegetarian. We have. So I went back and told my father, you know, he obviously doesn't trust our kashrus. Now, what's the Shiloh over here? So there is a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about whether leaky olives are considered to be mukshar lekabel tumah or not. Rashi learns what the machlokas is in terms of the identification of the substance that leaks from the olive, which is called muhal. Does muhal have a din of oil? In which case, it is one of the seven mashkin that would be makshar the olive stem lekabel tumah. Or does it have a din of just made peres bi'alma? Apple juice is not makshar lekabel tumah if it's real apple juice, not the stuff they put into the water. But a real apple juice does not. So this is olive juice, it's not oil. Olive juice is certainly not going to create hechsher lekabel tumah. That's how Rashi learns the machlokas. Others learn the machlokas. The Rambam learns the machlokas is not in terms of that, but in terms of the das ha-ba'alim. Is there a das ha-ba'alim that desires his olives to be wedded with mu'al or not? Fine. But in either event, according to Beit Shammai, there's no problem of an olive that is wet. According to Beit Hillel, there is a problem. So what does Beit Hillel say you have to do if you're not collecting olives? You have to make a hole in the bottom of the olive container to indicate that you're not interested in the mashka. That way the mashka drips, even though the mice, obviously they get wet, but since you did that act, you're showing I, the owner, have no interest in it, and then, by definition, it's not considered to be mashka, because it's only ki yutan, which is read ki yitain. It's written without the book. So therefore, he saw that it was damp, and he was thinking, how did it get so damp unless they held a Beit Shammai? Now the thing is, he himself was from Beit Shammai. So apparently he was being mocked for like Beit Hillel. And he wouldn't eat it because he was afraid that Reb Tzadok was being soimech on Beit Shammai, and didn't make a hole in the bottom of the container, and therefore these olives were mukshar lekabel tumah, leave it a Beit Hillel. But being as they thought it wasn't mukshar lekabel tumah, they weren't going to be makbid on it. If an amoreh would have touched it or so on, they would have thought it's still kosher. So he says, look, I don't eat olives. So when he brought it back to his father immediately understood, yeah, right, he doesn't eat olives. He says, go back and tell him it's got a badat. Lech ve'amorlo, tell him that actually, chavit nekuvah hayita, these olives were in a container that had a hole in the bottom. Oh, you don't believe me. You say, so how is it so wet? Sat mu'ash shemarim. Pieces of the olives, the leftovers, they had sealed up the hole. And it wasn't going out, but the act that showed that we didn't want it to be wet had been done, and it doesn't matter that they're wet. V'tnan chavit shel zeitim megugalim. Now, let's take a look at this. We learn in the Mishnah, if you have now a container of olives that are all put together in there, they're pressed together, so Beit Shammai omrim ein tzricha lenakev. What's the problem? Well, they're going to get a little bit damp from mu'al, it's not going to be mashar lekabel tumah. You don't have to put a hole in the bottom of the barrel. Beit Hillel omrim tzricha lenakev. No, you have to put in a hole, otherwise they're going to be mukshar lekabel tumah. Umodim, however, now tell him this, shim nikva, if there had been a hole, there was a tumah shmarim, and it got jammed up the hole, so that lamaisa, there is now a lot of mu'al in the barrel, doesn't matter. Even Beit Hillel is moda, shehi tahora. Now, he's telling this whole maisa to Rabbi Yochanan Achorani, saying, therefore you can eat it. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, who's saying over the story, says, now look, he himself actually was a big Talmud of Beit Shammai. I mean, so he shouldn't have cared. But even though Afa Pisha Talmid Shammai Haya, Kol Ma'asav Lo Asah Ela Kedivrei Beit Hillel, he was very machmir, and he was machmir even like Beit Hillel. Now, let's look at this and analyze this story. So, Iyamet Bishleima Asu. If you're going to tell me that normally people that followed Beit Shammai, in which case they would use these olives, despite the fact that there was no hole in the barrel, and if somebody brought them damp olives, they never would have said, I don't eat olives. And this year, Rabbi Yochanan HaKorani says, I don't eat olives. He's obviously a tremendous tzaddik. He's being machmir, even like they say, fine, so then you're making a point. If you're telling me none of the Talmidim of Beit Shammai anyway would have been Semech on the olives, so what? Understand? So my Rabbi is saying, we understand what happened. There's no big deal. Of course he did like Beit Hillel. Everybody did like Beit Hillel. You said Beit Shammai would never have done otherwise. There we go. The lion stirs. That's our question, Asu or Lo Asu. If the norm is that you don't follow the Halakha Beit Shammai, so what are you telling me? That he's like the norm. Thank you very much. You have to mention it. Obviously, he was doing something special. So apparently, everybody else wouldn't have done that special. So now we have a riot, and apparently also, and you get another riot, Tashma. Shalud Rabbi Yehoshua, they asked Rabbi Yehoshua, tell us, what's the psak halacha lamaisa? I mean, Saras Abbas, what's the din? Mao, Amalem. What do you mean? What? I mean, famous Mishnah, you know, Machlokas Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. Now, come on, you know perfectly well what we're asking you. Paskin, man, who's the halacha like? Halacha divrei mi. Marlon, what are you guys trying to get me knocked off or something? Understand? You're putting my head between a rock and a hard place over here. I mean, whatever I say, I'm dead. Don't ask me questions like that. I need two factions. I should get stuck between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. All we need is a little bit of movement. And whose skull is it that gets crushed? Mine. Not interested in basking on this, Shiloh. However, I can give you some data. I can tell you, Lamaisa, a certain point which may be meaningful to you in your search. What I can tell you is that there are shtei mishpachot gedolot shayu b'Yerushalayim. There were definitely these very important families that were in Yerushalayim. One of them was the Mishpachat Beit Tzevuim, and that was from the Ben Achmai. There was also the Mishpachat Beit Kupai, and those were all the bank workers. They came from the Ben Mekoshesh. Barnea, these people are in your neighborhood? Not in your neighborhood. And all of them, they're all B'nai Tzarot, all of the kids over there, followed the halacha like Beit Hillel. The Tzarot went without chalitza, married into the open market. And umayim kohanim gedolim, I could tell you that from that family, kohanim gedolim were appointed, and shimshu ala gabei amizbeach. And so you can draw your own conclusions from that. Now we'll see what, because lechora this is not the problem they were asking him. Because on the surface, even Beit Shammai would be meida that the children were not pegumim, unless you hold of what Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was saying earlier, but that we'll get. But, okay, the Gemara is going to ask, well, what does this have to do with this data? Is not what we were asking you. Fine, we'll get to that. Now, but getting back to the issue, if you're going to tell me that when Beit Shammai held that you marry a Tzoras Habas and create a mamzer, so then I understand why he's scared to death to say anything. That's all he needs is to give a tzak. He gives a tzak like Beit Hillel, and the 496,000 mamzerim from Beit Shammai are surrounding his house with pitchforks and that. So he's not going to say anything. So obviously he's terrified. If you're going to tell me that, well, not that they never did it anyway. So what's he frightened for? No? So then he's just telling an halacha like any other halacha. I mean, it never affected anybody, right? Because anyway, Beit Shammai lo asu kedivreihem. So iamid lo asu, amai ka'ama mityareani. What's he nervous about? Wait a second. What are you saying? Nina mityasu. What's he worried about? My mityareani. Let me ask you how you understand it. It happens to be that Rabbi Yehoshua Shita is that there's no such thing as a mamzer from a chayvei krisis. He holds only a chiyav from a chiyav misa creates a mamzer. So even if his shita would have been that the din is that a tzarat abad should not get yibum, if you would ask him, but what's the din of a child from a tzarat? He said, no problem. Even if she went in, it's no problem. So what are the mamzerim going to attack him for? I mean, he's not saying they're mamzerim. Right? So anyway, there's no problem, right? So let's say, even now that you're saying, no, you're concluding. Beit Shammai actually went ahead and where they married at Tzoras Habas. What's he afraid of? Naimit Yareani. Omer Rabbi Yoshua Eimamzer Ela Michaivei Mitot Beit Din. So, I mean, if they surround his house, he could have gone out there like the Pope and say, I do hereby dub the all Kisharim 100%. So what's the problem? Well, I mean, you're right. He's not saying they're mamzerim. But he's saying they're no good for the kahuna, isn't he? I mean, it's a kavachomer from an almona lekohen gadol. Ma almana, she'eni surah noeg bechol. What's the din? An almona that is a very, very limited issue. The only person who's not allowed to marry an almona is a kohen gadol. Nonetheless, the Torah says, lo yechalel zaro be'amav. Oh, so in other words, that means that he is creating now over here chalalut. So it means he's pogging the child from the kuhuna. So, and a zoo over here, you're talking about an isur koret, which is isura shava bakol. So koshikin, the children should be pegumim. So even if it's not mamzerin, he is scared. Because if he's telling them that the pegumim the kuhuna, so then that's a problem. Let me clarify what just happened here. Kobo mine tzoras. They ask Rabbi Yoshua, what is the halacha about tzoras harayas? They're supposed to get yibum, they're supposed to get chalitza. And he comes along and he starts talking to them about what the din is on the children of tzoras that didn't get yibum, that followed the din and basically the way we do it. They just went out without chalitza, they went and got married. And you're telling me that they're kosher lekuhuna, as if somebody was interested in that. I mean, they're just chayvei lavin. That would be true even according to Beit Shammai, not only according to Beit Hillel. Now, actually, says the Gemara, Tarte Kaboimine, there were two separate questions here. The part that we were aware of that they asked, what's the din of Tzorot? Tzorot now, Chayev, in Yibam v'chalitza. But they also asked, V'im tim tzoloima, if you're going to tell me that the halacha is, when it comes to the Tzoros, the halacha is like Beit Hillel, in which case they don't require chalitza and they should go l'shuk. What would be the din of children of such tzaris, but may tzaris, where they went to Beis Hillel, then there's a kept halacha Beis Hillel, what would be the din of Gliber Beit Shammai Mao? Who cares? If you're passing to me that the din of tzaris is to be like Beis Hillel, is it really germane to know what Beit Shammai would have thought of that? That we're asking you to pass like Beis Hillel. Ah, no, my nafkamina, there is an nafkamina. An nafkamina would be actually to determine what the din is, what we were just taking for granted a moment ago, what the din is of b'nei chai ve'lavim in terms of the kuhuna. Is a daughter of a chai ve'lav sula l'kuhuna or not? And this suffix would be true of Maisa, libet Beit Shammai as well. And the question is, what would Beit Shammai hold? But it would be true even in a case of Liba de Beit Hillel. I mean, obviously, we could say the simple explanation is we're talking about in a case where she was Chayevus and Yibam, not a Tzara. In other words, where a regular Yavama that was a Lashuk went out and got married, not getting Chalitza. However, as Tesis explains, what we're about to say is based on a Shaila that was asked by Anshe Alexandria to Rabbi Yoshua and Maseches Nida about what the din is of a marzir grushato, so mele he brings in the following case. The nafkamina would be lemifshat vlad marzir grushato. We have a similar case where there's a child that's born to an iser lav that is exactly the same level of iser. Zivam lashuk is an iser lav. Somebody who is marzir grushato, after she got married to somebody else, he had divorced his wife. She has married somebody else. The guy dies. He remarries his wife, which is an iser diraisa, and he has a child. Now, the question was asked to Rabbi Yoshua, what's the din of those children? So that question, lemifshat, to solve the question of what the din is of a vlad marzik grushasay, that's true even according to Beit Hillel. And we have to determine, what is the din of a child of an iser lav? Is such a child posel to the kuhuna or not? Mika, I mean, should we say that, isn't that the same kavachomer that we just made before about an almano kohen gadol? There you have an Isser Lav, okay? It's a very, very limited Lav, that it's only Chal on a Kohen Gadol, it's not not something that is a general lav. Nonetheless, the halacha is that benapagum. It says beferish over there lo yichalel zar o beyamav, which means that the zera that he has from such a relationship is pogum derekuna. So, and he creates chalolut. So the question over here is the case, given the case of Ma'azer Grushosai, or given any other similar case, such as a regular Yavama who was chayev as a chalitza and went out l'shuk. So now this case of the Grusha, She'isurasha v'abakot, which is a law that applies not only to a Kohen Gadol, and not only to all Kohanim, but to everyone in the world. Even a Yisrael is not allowed to marry a Grushosai, and he's not allowed to marry a Yavama l'shuk. So isn't it obvious? Ain't a din shebenap agum lekunam. And obviously, your child now is going to end up pogum, because how could she possibly marry a kohen? Question over here. Some shail about what exactly the question is. Rashi learns the ben of such a union is certainly pasul lekuna, because the case over here would be that if the father is a Kohen, he was meant to be a Kohen, so he was born from the union of a Kohen and a Grusha, and that's definitely Yisrei Kuhuna, and anybody born of Yisrei Kuhuna is considered to be a Cholol. The Shiloh over here is by the daughter. What's the din? Is such a daughter allowed to marry to the Kuhuna? That's our question. Okay, there's others. Really, there are other Rishonim, there's Machlokes, and precisely what the Das Rashi is. If there is such a thing, let's say a Vlad, who is a male, who is Noilad from an Akum, there's also a question, is whether he's considered to be Pogum Legabi, his daughter. But in any event, the portion of the case over here is that we're talking about now, daughter born to such a union, Ma'azer Grushosai. So surely we're not talking about whether the son is a Kohen, because anyway it'd be a Cholol. Is this daughter Kasher Lekuna? And the Shaila would be that on the one hand it's a Mamish, a Kavachomer from the Din of Almana. On the other hand we could say Odilma. Or we could say the Ika Lemifrach, that sounded like a very good Kavachomer. Because you could say Mala Almana Shiatzvamit Chalelas. What kind of rank can you bring from the case of the Almana? The Almana herself, when it says that he should not be mechalal zaro be'amav means that the wife also becomes now a chalala. So since now the almona herself was a perfect kosher woman, becomes herself now psula in the union with the kohen gadol of this type, so that means she's not going to be able to marry any kohen ever again, even after he dies, and she's not asura because of an almona, she just wants to marry a regular kohen, she can't. So the halacha is, of course, any woman that has slept with an Yisrei Kuhuna becomes a chalal. All right? So she can't get married to Kohen. So, and furthermore, if she, let's say she's a daughter of a Kohen, she's been eating truma now from her father's home, she now becomes asura to eat truma. So she's a chalala. So that means that this union had immense effect on her. Okay, I understand. So then if that's the case, it also affects her child. But when you're talking about a Grushim, as a Grushasri, or the case of Yavama L'shuk, I mean, over there, they themselves don't become Pasul L'kuhuna because of the Bia of an Isra Lav. And therefore, now, the case we had before, that he was afraid of Rabbi Yeshua, that was a Bia of an Isra Kores, not an Isra Lav. But Stam, from an Isra Lav, she wouldn't have become Nivselet. Therefore, perhaps the daughter in that case also wouldn't have been Nivsela. So in other words, it's still consistent to say, Rabbi Yeshua was terrified that if he would have said that they were Chayvei Krisas, that even though he wouldn't be making them Mamzerim, he would be making them Pigumim for the Kuna. That's fine, that makes sense. And furthermore, they asked him a different question. What would be the halach if you pass in like Beis Hillel indeed, and that they don't require the Chalitza, and now I'm asking you, what would be the din? I'll leave it to Beit Shammai. You'll say, well, who cares? Because it's basically the same din. In other words, whatever we would hold about an Isser Lav, which according to Beit Shammai is an Isser Lav, or in a regular case of Yom HaLashuk, like Beis Hillel, or like anybody, when it comes to Shailav Magz and Grushos, which is also an Isser Lav, do we or do we not learn it out of the Kavachomer of Alman HaLakoyen Gadol? Because an Alman HaLakoyen Gadol, who herself is not Nifselis right just from the Bia of the Isser Lav, there's no raya that may her child is necessarily Pegum HaLakoyen. Maybe not. And therefore, they wanted to know, tell us what the halacha is. To which he responded, he says, look, from Alu, he told them, I'm not going to make open my mouth when it comes to Shailu the Tzores, because I'm afraid. Mityareyani. If I tell you that the halacha is like Betil over there, so then anybody that I made Pazalakuna is going to come and kill me over here, even though Ilashitasi, they're not a mamzer. On the other hand, I do want you to know, if you're asking me, so, what would be the din of Bnei Tzoros? So you're asking me, what's the halacha of a chi of lav that went ahead and married Lashuk, according to Beit Shammai? Or you want to know the chlal, a libra Beit Sil, what's general the halacha of a chi of lav? That I can tell you, that even according to Beit Shammai, ani meid lachem, that they would certainly be kosher kahuna. Because, I mean, look, certainly we would not have appointed a Kohen Gadol without clearing it with Beit Shammai also. I'm not going to make a Kohen who's not someone that's mekubal on the Am as a whole, or some held he was possible. So we're going to have a Dafka make a Kohen Gadol as possible. So therefore, I'm telling you that Lamaisa, clearly they took such families, even though they were Chayve Lavim, according to Beit Shammai, who had gone out and married Lashuk, and they made them Kohanim Gedolim. And in the case of the Mishpachas of the Tzoreis, that didn't keep the halacha like Beit Shammai, kept the halacha Beit Hillel, became Kohanim Gedolim. And certainly that was Haldas Beit Shammai. That's the case. It shows that the Kal Vachomer of Amon HaLekohen must have not applied to the case of a Chi of Lav, the greater, would have applied only to an Issachuna or to a Chayiv Krisis. You'll say, but what about Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who asked before, why don't we make a takana? Because we have a terrible situation over here, because they're going to be pegumim lakuna because of the kavachomer for Amon HaLekohen Gadol. Didn't he know that that's not true, that they wouldn't be pegumim lakuna as Yavam is Lashok, even a Beit Shammai? Because don't we see over here that there were such families? So Lamaisa, the Achronim ask, is it the pshat that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri didn't know that there was such a maisa? Is it the pshat that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri held that indeed they would have appointed Kohanim Gedolim that were not Ksherim Alib the Beit Shammai? But whatever it is, certainly there's a machlokas here about how far we can do the Kal Vachomer from the Almona, the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is saying as a davar poshut would apply to the children of Tzoros that went to Lashuk. And according to what we're saying over here, Rabbi Yeshua, it certainly did not. Now we can bring a raya for sure that Beit Shammai was also kedivrayim for the raya. Tashma b'mei Rabbi Daisa ben Orkenis, who trot sarat abat lachim. It came that in the days of Rabbi Daisa ben Orkenis, they were matir a tzoras abat to the brother, because the Rabbi Daisa ben Orkenis, the brother, was from the Talmidei Beit Shammai, as we'll see later on, and went ahead and was matir it, and everybody went and there was semach on that. Shema mina asu, if there's such a mice as we're going to see tomorrow, then obviously people who followed Beit Shammai actually kept the halacha mamish and were miyabim at Tzoros Habas. Shema mina indeed, also Beit Shammai kedivrayim, even after the psak of halacha gebeis Hillel. And so it is that the Gemara comes out over here that those who held lo asu, like Rish Lakish, it's not true, there were also, and therefore we need to find a solution in any event to the problem of Lotus Godadu, which is Shnei Batei Dinim Birachas, or even Bezdin Echad, and that would have mixed us, some like Beit Shammai, mixed us, some like Beis Hillel.